For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, March 24th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's kick things off with the top 10 movies at the domestic box office this past weekend. Hit me up.
Will do. So, spoiler alert right up top. This is not going to be a positive conversation. I wish we could have one about the box office sometime soon, but today is not that day. Coming in at number one this past weekend was Snow White, Disney's live-action reimagining of the animated classic Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It topped the domestic charts with $43 million, but that is a very lousy number for a movie with a $250 million production budget, if not more. So we'll talk about that more in a minute, but that is not good news. Number two, we had Black Bag, Steven Soderbergh's latest, which actually held pretty well, though that is a small consolation for a movie that didn't perform well in its first place, but made $4.4 million in its second weekend, coming up on $15 million domestically. Still has a long way to go for a movie with a $50 million production budget. At number three, we had Captain America Brave New World with $4.1 million in its sixth weekend. The Marvel's latest finally limped past $400 million at the global box office. Not going to be profitable in theaters, but you know, it's not among the lowest grossing MCU movies, so take the wins where we can, I guess. At number four, we had Mickey 17, Warner Brothers' latest from Bong Joon-ho, in its third weekend, made $3.9 million, passed $40 million domestically, finally passed $100 million worldwide, still looking at big flop territory for that one, given that it has a $118 million budget. Number five, we had Novocaine, which was last weekend's winner, with $3.7 million. It dropped 57%, so that one's kind of sliding quick for Paramount, coming up on $16 million domestic against an $18 million budget. Number six, we had the other weekend's other big new release, The Alto Knights, which has Robert De Niro pulling double duty for Warner Brothers. This one made just $3.1 million on over 2,600 screens. It is a flop, ladies and gentlemen. At number seven, we had The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie. That one actually held pretty okay. $1.8 million in its second weekend, dropped about 42%. Not a good per screen average, but it's nice that word of mouth seems to be sort of getting around for a movie that kind of really didn't catch on. Number eight, we had The Monkey, Oz Perkins' latest Stephen King adaptation. That made $1.5 million in its fifth weekend. That crossed $60 million globally, good for a $10 million budget. At number nine, we had Dogman still hanging in there for DreamWorks. $1.5 million in its eighth weekend, over $95 million domestic. This might touch $100 million domestic before it's done. Pretty interesting stuff there. And at number 10, we had the faith-based The Last Supper. In its second weekend, $1.3 million, dropped 52%. That's where we're at. Where would you like to go first here, Ben?
Well, I think we should probably pay tribute to Snow White since it won the weekend. We're not really going to be talking about the quality of that movie very much on the podcast. I mentioned on Friday's episode that I'm basically opting out of it. I have no plans to see it. BJ gave her brief review of it there, so you can go back and listen to that if you're interested. But I guess from like a pure dollars and cents perspective, Ryan, like a $250 million budget or whatever is not what you want to see for a live action reimagining of a classic Disney movie. And then this opening weekend is pretty rough in that regard, right?
I mean, it's disastrous. So like, let's provide some context from recent history. There was the 2023 live action reimagining of The Little Mermaid. That opened to $118 million across a four-day weekend over Memorial Day in 2023. Finished with about $570 million worldwide, if memory serves. And that still wasn't quite an outright profitable success theatrically for Disney because of a $250 million budget. Now, over time, because it did reasonably well in theaters, VOD, Disney Plus, Blu-ray merchandise, probably gotten to the green, but, you know, look, when you're talking about a $43 million domestic opening, and then let's also get into the international here, only did $44.3 million overseas for an $87.3 million global start. It was estimated to open around $100 million globally heading into the weekend, and even that was kind of an iffy territory for a movie with a budget like this. Critics were very soft on it. It's got a 44% approval rating, B plus cinema score, which is pretty much equates to audiences going meh. So, you know, it's not like a critical disaster or anything, but as we keep seeing, you know, for these big, big movies, you need 90% Rotten Tomatoes scores. You need A cinema scores. You need word of mouth. You need buzz. You've got to give people a reason to leave the house. This just is not going to cut it. And, you know, as we talked about, the problem here is that studios are programming like it's 2019. They're hoping these live action remakes are going to do $100 million easy domestic. They're hoping the Marvel movies are going to do $100 million easy domestic. That's not happening now. So when you have these gigantic dry spells between these big movies and then the big movies really don't hit, you're in serious trouble. And that's kind of what's happening right now. So not only does Disney have what looks to be a flop on its hands. Now, let me be clear. This is not guaranteed a flop yet because we have to at least qualify that, you know, Mufasa the Lion King opened to $35 million in December and limped its way to $718 million worldwide. But that was with an outsized showing internationally, which this movie doesn't have so far. And Mufasa played better with audiences than this movie did. So any of the indicators we have so far don't suggest that that's going to happen. I want to be clear that I'm aware that that happened, but this doesn't appear to be a similar situation as Mufasa. Plus, Mufasa had a more friendly release date with nothing coming down the pipeline for a while, so it had weeks and weeks to clean up. You know, Snow White doesn't really have that in the same way because you got Minecraft coming out in a couple weeks. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's you know, to say it's not good is an understatement, but yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot we can talk about with this. I don't know if you have any specific thoughts or questions, but yeah, there's still more to be said, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I would love to know what else you have to say about it. The only thing that I was thinking of is, like, I guess this puts even more pressure on Lilo and Stitch being a big hit later on. And as we've speculated, we think that that movie is going to perform pretty well. So, like, the idea of Disney just stopping the live action remake thing probably is too big of a dream for me to like put much faith in, but yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to remind people that that's still on the horizon. That seems like at least it's positioned to do a lot better than this movie, which just feels like, I mean, I know that Snow White is like one of their top tier properties kind of on paper, but like it's the oldest Disney animated feature. I'm not really sure how much play Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs from 1937 is still getting in on Disney Plus for modern kids, you know? So I understand that they would want to apply this tactic or this strategy to their ostensibly what is one of the most important movies in the company's history. But just in terms of like giving people a must watch piece of entertainment, it certainly seems like that didn't happen here. So we'll see if Lilo and Stitch can do that.
I agree, but I also think the difference. So one thing to look at the difference for Lilo and Stitch in this is when I was kind of looking over this and looking at over, you know, all of the Disney live action remakes that have made a lot of money. You look at Aladdin, The Lion King, The Little Mermaid, with Alice in Wonderland sort of being the outlier here. But for the most part, the ones that have performed very well were 80s and 90s hits that were kind of nostalgic hits to that generation. Whereas you had like Tim Burton's Dumbo didn't do particularly well. Pinocchio got dumped directly to Disney Plus for reasons we don't need to discuss. You know, and then this now. So, you know, I think if you're going to do these serious, like old classics, you have to ensure that you're knocking it out of the park critically, right? Like, you know, because you can, I think people would maybe show up, but you got to really give them a reason to show up. Whereas, you know, Aladdin limped to $1 billion with so-so reviews just because people had a lot of nostalgia for that property that were actually going to buy tickets, and Will Smith being the star factor there. And so, yeah, it's that sort of stuck out to me that, you know, these really classic movies aren't quite driving in the same way for these live action remakes. But, you know, I looked back at the 2015 Cinderella, which is actually a good movie. I think it's a really good movie, I think. But that movie also had a $95 million budget. Even if you account for inflation there, that doesn't get anywhere near $250 million. So that budget acted as like an insurance policy. You know, so that movie performed well, but it's also they're budgeting it in a way where they're not shooting themselves in the foot. Now, I'm sympathetic here because this movie's been delayed a bunch. You obviously had reshoots. You had the pandemic. You had all this stuff. But, you know, I still don't think $250 million is reasonable. It just isn't. And, you know, circumstances, whatever, in the future, this is another reminder that studios have got to get these budgets down somehow, some way. I don't make movies. I don't know how. I know that I see other filmmakers making things that look good that are not quite this expensive. I think you have to find a way to make that happen. And, you know, it just... because the profit margins just aren't there on the $250 million movies. They're just not. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm really concerned about the next couple weeks now for theaters. And just to give some perspective, we are now 5% behind 2024, just about, in terms of ticket sales. And, you know, about 16% behind 2023. So we are really trending in the wrong direction here, and stuff like this really isn't helping.
Okay. Anything else on Snow White before we should take a break?
Mark Webb innocent, I would suspect. I quite like Mark Webb as a director, and I feel like he's definitely gotten stuck on some big projects that got away from him, and I just suspect that it's not his fault. I don't know. I would like to see Mark Webb go do like another mid-budget thing, like Gifted, a movie that not a lot of people saw a handful of years ago that I quite liked, but we'll see.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into The Alto Knights and some other movies that hit theaters this past weekend.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so we have to talk about The Alto Knights. This was a sort of pet project of David Zaslav, who runs Warner Brothers. He's friendly with the screenwriter of this movie, and so this was kind of... it's being talked about as like, this was one that he kind of grandfathered in. You know, this is not necessarily a movie that I think could be pinned on Mike DeLuca and Pam Abdi, the duo or whatever that run Warner Brothers Pictures right now. So yeah, The Alto Knights opening to what'd you say? Less than $4 million or something?
$3.1 million on 2,651 screens for a very lousy per screen average is $1,193, particularly for a movie that carries a reported budget of $50 million. However, there are quite a few reports out there that suggest that that budget is much higher. I will not say that that is true because the official budget is said to be $50 million. However, it is not exactly uncommon for a movie's reported budget to not exactly be correct. So I will leave it at that.
But. Yeah. I mean, okay, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush here, Ryan, but like you've got Robert De Niro, who I would argue that, let's say, younger audiences might not be as thrilled at a new De Niro movie than older ones, right? So again, I'm trying not to be like too broad here, but like for a movie like this that is not necessarily based on some piece of IP or whatever, and a star like De Niro in multiple roles and Barry Levinson directing, again, a guy who like viewers who were actively watching movies in theaters in the 70s, 80s, and 90s would recognize that name, but maybe not so much more modern audiences. Do you think it's possible that this movie is just not performing because its audience is older, and broadly speaking, the older audience, the older demographic, just does not really show up to the movies in the same way that they used to?
I definitely think that's an enormous factor. And even like I wrote during South by Southwest, I wrote a thing about, you know, kind of the future of movie theaters and what that's looking like. And during the Q&A section, there was this lady that she was a bit older and she's like, you know, I have a senior group and we want to go to the movies, but we don't want to see these, you know, Marvel movies and crap that, you know, is getting put out. And then all of the people on stage were kind of like, yeah, but we're also programming other stuff. Like you're just not, you know, like there was almost a bit of an argument that ensued there. Like, and, you know, this is an example of something that maybe could get older folks back out to the movies, but I would also point out that it has a 37% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, it's not like they're missing some critical darling here either. So I think that that's probably always a bigger problem. But then again, it didn't help Black Bag either. That movie has, like, I think, like, a 93 critical rate, you know, so it's like, I don't know. It just, it's not the kind of movie that's performing well right now. You're right. But, you know, I look at sort of the buzz that The Irishman got, where you got, like, oh man, De Niro playing like a younger De Niro with, you know, but it's Scorsese, right? That you have like something else to hook on that. Mm-hmm. And Netflix pouring a fortune into it. I think Warner Brothers probably, it seems like they sort of knew this movie wasn't going to do very well. So I felt like it had a very limited marketing campaign. This seemed like one they're just getting off their books. I don't know. That could be wrong, but correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't see a single trailer for this in any theaters that I went to, you know, to see other movies. But
I think I saw one at an AMC, but it definitely did not have like a robust marketing campaign. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, it's a combination of factors, but it's I don't want to give Warner Brothers too much credit for like releasing what is by many accounts a bad movie, or at least a so-so movie, but like, they are trying to release the kinds of movies that people say they want, but you know, as we discussed last weekend, when, you know, Black Bag, Novocaine, and all these other movies don't, you know, people just aren't showing up, and there is a myriad of reasons for that, many of which are valid, but it's just emblematic of the bigger issue.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so yeah, maybe let's talk a little bit about some of the smaller movies that you mentioned, or maybe a couple that you didn't, that didn't pop into that top 10. So what do you think about some of those?
Yeah, so again, kind of getting at the larger issue here, we had two smaller movies that came out. Oh, I don't even want to say smaller, but certainly small in terms of rollout and debut. We had Locked, which is a new, again, relatively acclaimed thriller starring Bill Skarsgård and Anthony Hopkins. And it's like a very contained thriller, smaller company called The Avenue Entertainment. So this was never meant to be like a big thing, but you know, they released it on 971 theaters and it made $964,000. You know, it just didn't register at all with audiences. And again, like an original thriller with actors people like, not breaking through. And then in a similar vein, you had Ash, which is a new sci-fi thriller from Flying Lotus that stars Isaac Gonzalez and Aaron Paul. This one is from Shudder, and it just debuted at South by Southwest, you know, had kind of a big rollout there, made $716,000 on over 1,100 screens, you know, and look, this is partially a marketing issue. These movies were not marketed massively, but again, Ash had a huge premiere at South by Southwest. They were trying there, you know, and, you know, these are obviously meant to be VOD plays. They're meant to be streaming plays. But if IFC, Shudder, these smaller companies are going to continue to put these movies in theaters, which I respect, you got to at least try to get them on people's radar. And then if they do hit your radar and you say you want to see original movies in theaters, you got to go. You know, like, nobody's expecting these movies to make millions and millions of dollars, but you got to at least make them a qualified hit or something for companies to continue to do this. You know, so that's rough to me. You know, it's just more, not as big as, you know, it's not as high profile of a disappointment as Snow White or even Also Nights, but it is another indicator of, you know, not great. You know, if these things can't even clear $1 million. So, you know, that it's just more bad, more of the same. And I just don't like being this negative, but I don't, you know, there's not a lot of positivity to hang our hats on right now.
Yeah, we got an email from a listener who signed their name A Tumbleweed in New Mexico, and they were disappointed to hear us talk, I think this was a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week, about viewer habits being blamed for a lack of box office for original stuff. And they said, I know you try your best to keep politics out of the show, but nonetheless, it seems slightly tone deaf to ignore that some of the largest employers are laying off people for no reason. And while, yes, people are being rehired back, now more than ever, all of my friends and family are saving as much money as possible in case they get laid off. Comparing movie tickets to a once-in-a-lifetime concert ticket purchases like you did in that episode just seems like comparing apples to oranges. Trust that your reliable family moviegoers are not spending thousands of dollars to see the latest concert, and they're not doing it so frequently to get rid of movie watching altogether. At some point, we simply must come to terms with the fact that spending $100 a month for loads of content makes more sense than $100 at the movies for one night, even with some of these subscription movie ticket prices. Their email goes on, but I on one hand, Ryan, I don't like the idea of putting the blame on the viewers, but at the same time, I think what you just said is true. Like, if you are one of those people who is constantly bemoaning the fact that there's always remakes and that kind of stuff, when something comes along that is not that you're even vaguely interested in, I think I want people to go out and see things, but I understand that it's really expensive and like often not a great experience. So like, where does that leave us right now? You know, we're just in this weird position.
Right. And that's the problem. And I am extremely sympathetic to that. Like, and that's why when the CEO of Sony Pictures last year was like, hey, I think lower ticket prices is a good thing and studios should get on board with that, I was like, hell yeah, let's go that route, because I don't think making things more expensive is the right way to go about it. You know, and that's why I think like Tuesday discount days are a great thing. And I think that should be expanded to maybe like, we've talked about this before, maybe you go all midweek, you go like Monday to Thursday, you do the discount, you know, ticket nights. Like, I'm big on these subscription services. I am big on finding a way to make this more affordable for people. You know, like, so in that way, I am completely sympathetic. Like, I am someone who is currently myself right now trying to save money for various reasons. Like, believe me, you know, as an entertainment journalist, I am not awash with cash right now. You know, like, it's just not my situation. I didn't mean to come off as tone deaf there, but also at the same time, to your point, Ben, if you are going to be one of those people that is going to be loud about, you know, where are these movies? Why not this? Why this? Why that? Then you have to understand that, like, this is where the vote with your dollars thing comes in. You know, streaming it on Netflix down the line helps a little, but it doesn't help enough to really move the needle. These dollars really count. So, yeah, I am sympathetic to that. And there are a million problems, and I think like the industry at large has to sort of get together, and there almost needs to be some big like entertainment summit where like all of the studios and like theater owners get together and they got to hammer some stuff out, because everybody's got to get on the same page, because there are bigger problems right now for sure.
I mean, ostensibly, that's what CinemaCon should be, right? Like, I think that's what it should be. And you and I have both covered that event in the past, and like, the theater owners and the studio heads and like the people who make big presentations there, they just kind of seem like willfully putting their heads in the sand, and they never really address this stuff in a direct way. And they always kind of talk about the issues a little bit more vaguely, but a little bit more broadly. And like, they never really drill down on genuine solutions that could be had there. And I feel like that's the perfect opportunity for these people once a year to do a true state of the industry situation and be like, okay, here are some actionable steps that we can take to try things out. And there's just been such a lack of innovation and seemingly a lack of interest in trying to meet people where they are. It's just really frustrating. So I don't think we're going to be covering CinemaCon this year, but I don't know. I'll try to keep an eye on it from afar and see if any of those conversations actually go in that direction for once. But the past several years that I think you and I have been covering it or paying attention to it, I just have not really heard those conversations being spoken with a bullhorn from the main stage. Maybe people are having side conversations in smaller rooms or little meetings or what have you. But yeah, I would love for that to be the place where, you know, the sort of ground zero for the change that we hope could happen. But
100%. But yeah, and you know, you and I might have a larger conversation about this later. But yeah, there are things that need to be talked about or discussed, or, you know, because again, like, if AMC Theaters goes the way of Blockbuster Video, you know, things are in a much worse situation, you know, that like, and yeah. I don't know. So there is one other thing we should talk about this weekend, but this one is like, this one's easier to explain. And even in the best of times, it's not like anyone would be surprised at this, but Magazine Dreams, the still critically acclaimed movie starring Jonathan Majors, did hit theaters this weekend. Briarcliff Entertainment sort of bought it at a fire sale after Majors' assault conviction kind of got him outsized from Hollywood for a little bit there. It opened on 815 theaters, made just $700,000. You know, like, look, Majors became a he was pretty much excised entirely. He was fired from Marvel. He, you know, kind of,
I think his representation dropped him, all that.
Yeah,
kind of
it
stuff.
Was a bit like, and so it Briarcliff is a much smaller company. Originally Disney was going to give this thing, because I think it was, what, wasn't it 20th Century Classics or something bought it, I think, and they were going to give
Searchlight,
it a,
but yeah.
Searchlight, it was Searchlight, I'm sorry, but they were going to give it a big award season campaign. Mm-hmm. Majors was pegged as possibly like a Best Actor nomination, like, you know, so like, but that was then, this is now. And so like, this is not one of those things that like, oh, I'm surprised this, no, like this was probably what was going to happen. Like, so maybe people will check it out, you know, on streaming and VOD out of curiosity, but this, as it stands, as it ended up unfolding, this was never going to break out theatrically. And I think as far as Majors having any sort of meaningful comeback in Hollywood now, like if this movie had blown up in theaters, and, you know, again, like for better or worse, Hollywood tends to follow the money, right? Like, and if people mm-hmm. were still like, no, I love Majors and I will go see this movie and I will go, maybe that would have helped. But I think right now it definitely makes it less likely, at least in the immediate future, that he's going to have any sort of like high profile comeback. But yeah, I mean, that's just worth talking about, certainly, just because, you know, this movie did see, and it is a shame because, you know, for Jonathan Majors is one guy, and we've talked about this before when movies flop or when bad things happen. It is unfortunate because so many people work on these movies, and, you know, like you think about like as a director, right? Like you land the guy who's playing Kang in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you've got all of these like stars aligning, and your movie sells for a big deal. And I feel terrible. I don't know how to pronounce the director's name for this movie, but Elijah Bynum, I think, but like,
I think that's right. Yeah.
But like, you imagine the trajectory of that guy's career, you know, if this had all gone the way it was supposed to go. So I feel terrible for him. I feel terrible for a lot of these other people. I'm glad the movie's at least getting out there for his sake or whatever, but like, that's what sucks about it, right? Like, it's just, you know, because one guy sucks, you know, like the whole boat gets dragged down. And I always just feel so bad for those people in these situations, but you know, so that it's just worth, at least worth talking about. I don't know that I have a lot of like meaningful analysis beyond that, but it's not like it's surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. This was like a really small movie. It was always going to be a pretty small movie. If this blew up in some huge way, it would be like one of the biggest surprises of the decade or something. If people turned out in huge, huge numbers to see a movie as small as Magazine Dreams. So, I'm right there with you. I'm glad that, let's say, the production designer of this movie can now actually put this on their reel or something and hopefully get another job off of that, you know, kind of thing later on down the line.
Yeah. So, didn't this premiere at Sundance last year, or was it the year before? Did you see this movie, Ben?
Yeah, I did. I saw it very recently, actually, because I went to one of those AMC Screen Unseen things, and they surprised me with a screening of Magazine Dreams, which was an unconventional choice on their part, but I stuck around and watched the movie. I think it debuted, I want to say it debuted in like 2022 or 2023 Sundance, but Chris saw it and reviewed it out of that festival. So we have a review up on Slash Film from, you know, before the Majors story kind of broke as it did. So you can read Chris's thoughts there. I talked about it on a water cooler last week or the week before. So people can go back and listen to those thoughts if you're just joining us for the first time today. So,
okay. Because I guess what I was getting at is that it could have been like, you know, had Searchlight released it, coming off of the backs of, you know, some of other Majors' other hits. It's not a $200 million movie, but maybe, you know, if you look at what was the Emma Stone, like Frankenstein movie that came out a couple years ago?
Poor Things.
Poor Things, you know, that gets to like 118 million worldwide. Is it not conceivable that Magazine Dreams could have done something similar? You know, like under the best circumstances, the best circumstances, like, you know, like,
right,
you know,
right.
You know, or 50 million, whatever. It's a hell of a lot better than this. But anyway, so that's all I was getting at.
Totally. All right. Well, yeah, you can find more about all the stuff that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I'll try to link to a couple things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.